All right, welcome back to the Third String Podcast. This is our mock draft edition, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Pete LeCleed. Pete, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Zach. How about you? Ready for a little emergency pod midweek, night before NFL draft, night before round two of the NHL playoffs?
All sorts Absolutely. Of good stuff going on. It's crazy. I can't believe what a busy week it is sports-wise. Yeah, we've got the draft tomorrow. We've got some exciting NBA playoffs going on, NHL playoffs, which I know you've been watching a bit more closely than I have. We're going to try to keep this short like we have all of our previous episodes. So I was thinking one way we could do that is to basically have a little mini mock draft where you and I just go through, we'll go the first top 10, the first 10 picks in the draft and step in the shoes of the GMs of those teams and go through and just kind of talk about who we would pick if we were in the shoes of those GMs. How's that sound to you?
Perfect. Let's see why we don't make tons and tons of money on drafting NFL prospects. This will be fun.
Oh, yes, it will. I was reading something on The Ringer today by Roger Sherman, who's one of their college football writers. And he was saying that as a college football player, a college football analyst, he gets criticized a lot for bringing his opinions to the table because he often brings his college football biases to the table. For example, he says he's really high on Baker Mayfield and not at all on Josh Allen, and he doesn't understand why people don't share his views. And so he was sharing some of his previous opinions, like how he was high on Russell Wilson and everyone else had doubts, which obviously he was vindicated. But then in fairness, he did admit that he was really high on Johnny Manziel, who is still trying to claw his way back into the league without much success. So, yeah, I think, I don't really know where I was going with that, but
it's a great point that actually came up to me over the last week or so, as I keep seeing Mel Kiper and Todd McShay. Obviously, Todd McShay calls a lot of college games, but like,
yeah,
where the heck is Mel Kiper whenever we talk about college football? And where are the Kirk Herbstreits of the world and the like Chris Fowlers of the world and all these guys whose opinions we respect so much on Saturday Night Football in October? As we get into the draft, it just doesn't translate. I can't think of another sport that is so different in terms of how they evaluate talent than college football to the NFL. And I mean, you look at these guys, I mean, look at your Carson Wentz's of the world and all these guys who did not come from these big name programs who are doing phenomenal things in the NFL. It's fascinating, but it makes it really hard to predict who's going to work and who's going to be a bust.
Yeah, that's a good point too. And I think that is a problem that's unique to football, because when you look at prospect lists in baseball, for example, you don't find guys at the top of prospect lists who are like, 200 hitters throughout high school and college. But you'll be like, oh yeah, but prototypical MLB left fielder, slugger size, he's got all the right tools, he's got the mindset, he's a leader in the locker room. You won't see that. You'll just see, this guy hit 200 throughout his entire amateur and collegiate career, and he's not going to pan out. So I think it's weird that we can look at someone, and I guess we'll get to this. I don't want to jump the gun too much. We can look at someone like Josh Allen, whose career numbers are just bad, honestly, at Wyoming, a Mountain West school, and think, oh no, he's going to be a potential top pick in an NFL draft because he's got all the prototypical tools that you want to see in a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, Josh Allen, and again, not getting ahead of ourselves, but Carson Wentz, we at least had heard of that guy. He had been in the national title contention, even though it wasn't necessarily in the college football playoff. He still had that experience. And it's just very interesting to me as I'm looking at these draft boards of 245 players. I mean, you and I follow college football pretty closely. And
yeah.
How many of these names were you kind of pausing and going, ooh, who is this guy? Is this Bradley
absolutely.
Chubb? Is this Nick Chubb? I don't know. It's very, very interesting to me how unfamiliar I am with how much time I spend in the fall watching college football.
Yeah, totally agreed. Totally agreed. Should we kick this draft off?
Let's get it. So you wrote a great piece that we have on medium.com as to what the Cleveland Browns should do. So you wanna kick it off with what you think? If you're sitting in Cleveland tomorrow night, you're not Kevin Costner, unfortunately, but
I am not.
what are you thinking for your number one pick this year, my friend?
Yeah, this is a great question, and I appreciate you plugging my piece. If you guys want to read that, if you're listening, go to medium.com/thirdstring, 3RD string, and you can check out the piece there. Basically, I called it QB or not QB, a play on obviously the Shakespeare line from Hamlet. it's an argument basically against why the Browns should not draft a quarterback at number one or number four. So if I'm in John Dorsey's shoes, my argument basically goes like this, that they have the number one and the number four picks. They have a team full of needs. They have a good starting quarterback in Tyrod Taylor that they just traded for. So they don't, that's not a need right now in the same way that it is a need for the New York Jets. So the Browns have a above average QB under center right now in Tyrod Taylor. They have the number one and four picks that they can use to restock a roster that needs restocking, especially after eventual Hall of Famer offensive tackle Joe Thomas retired.
Yeah.
They need to pair another edge rusher with Myles Garrett, who they spent the number one pick on last year. So my thinking was that they should build along the lines with their number one and number four picks, because there are some really good offensive and defensive linemen that can be potentially could be generational talents. And they have the opportunity, unlike anybody else, to get both of them that early. So with that said, if I am John Dorsey, I am sitting at the NFL draft tomorrow night, I would use my number one pick on defensive end Bradley Chubb from North Carolina State.
Really? Taking Bradley Chubb first. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. So the reason, and you're going to play the role of Dave Gettleman here in just a second, Pete, but the reason I would take Chubb first is because I have a hunch that Gettleman might be looking at Chubb at the number two pick. I know there's a lot of talk about Barkley, even some talk about Rosen. But I have a hunch that Gettleman, who likes the front seven, that's the New York Giants system anyway. I know Gettleman's new in New York, but the New York Giants love front seven guys. Gettleman's drafted them in the past from his time in Carolina. And, you know, pairing a guy like Chubb along with, you know, Vernon in New York could be a difference maker. And New York plays in the same conference and division as the Eagles, who just won a Super Bowl under the same strategy, build through the front seven, have a really formidable defensive line. So I see Chubb as a potential target for the Giants at two, which is why if I'm John Dorsey at one, I'm just going to take him off the board right then. And I don't have to worry about missing out on him later on. So that's my pick at number one, Cleveland, for obvious reasons, like I just discussed on my piece. I'm not going to go quarterback. On to you, Pete, at number two. You're Dave Gettleman, New York Giants.
So you mind before I put on the Giants hat if I ask you a couple follow-up questions?
Yeah,
we'll play that. Now you got to face the media because you're the Cleveland GM for this.
Yeah.
So two questions. First and foremost, if this is any other team in the NFL besides the Cleveland Browns, and obviously you're the Cleveland Browns GM here, do you play this pick differently? And are you still a little gun-shy to take another quarterback after how many times, I don't want to say you've dropped the ball, but how many busts you've had, whether it's Johnny Manziel, whether we're talking about really any of the quarterbacks the last 15 years in this organization? Are you so afraid that you can't develop talent that you're not pulling a quarterback here? Or are you confident enough that there's still going to be a couple solid quarterbacks sitting at that number four pick that you can kind of hedge your bets here and still get probably one of your top two targets here in order to be safe?
Yeah, so all good questions. I mean, I don't want to reveal too much of my draft strategy here, but I think the questions would get much more harsh after I don't choose a quarterback at the number four pick either. And if I'm John Dorsey, there's a couple things. One, I'm only going to get a quarterback, the most important player on the field, if I really believe in that quarterback. And I have question marks over all of the sort of, we'll call them the consensus top four quarterbacks in this draft. Yeah. I think that Rosen and Darnold and Mayfield, who's the fourth one?
Probably either Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen.
I'm sorry, Allen. Yeah, I totally forgot about Allen. So, I mean, I personally think Lamar Jackson is one of the highest ceiling guys in this draft, but I think the consensus top four is Allen, Mayfield, Rosen, Darnold. And I have major concerns about all of those. And I'm not convinced that any of them are worth the top five pick. So, so if I'm John Dorsey, I'm explaining it this way. One, I'm inheriting a team from recently fired Sashi Brown that has a lot of holes. Two, my philosophy is I build and win along the lines, and I'm going to do that as well as I can. Three, we traded for Tyrod Taylor because we wanted to fix the quarterback problem now, and I wouldn't have traded for him if my plan was to pick up a quarterback with a number one pick. And we're going to, you know, wait it out for a year or two, see how Tyrod does in the system, give our lines time to develop so that we can protect our eventual franchise quarterback when we go get him. But that's our plan right now, and we're sticking to it. So that's what I would say if I was John Dorsey. I'd be pretty unapologetic. I'd outline, this is the plan. This was the plan all along. We weren't going to get a quarterback. Now, do I think this is actually going to happen tomorrow? No, I think the Browns are going to take probably Sam Darnold off the board right away. But if I'm John Dorsey, I take Bradley Chubb.
Fair. Do you think your fan base, with my second follow-up question, do you think your fan base is going to be mad at you for sticking with Tyrod Taylor here instead of trying to replace the Kaisers of the world who haven't shown the field understanding you want? You and I are huge fans on third string about him. He did great things in Buffalo, but he's not exactly the guy you think of when you think of your franchise quarterback. You look at his career in Baltimore, his career in Buffalo. He's always kind of been an under-the-radar guy. If you are a Cleveland fan and you're looking for a statement from your organization, this is going forward, do you think the statement of going for Bradley Chubb is enough to satisfy your fan base?
So, I mean, I guess I'm not really worried about satisfying a fan base, given that the performance last season was zero wins and they threw a parade to celebrate that. You know, I mean, I don't want to offend the Cleveland fans that we have on the podcast here, but I guess what I'm saying is, if I'm John Dorsey, I've inherited a mess from Sashi Brown. They won zero games last year. So if we win more than that next year, it's improving on that. And if I'm John Dorsey, knowing that I'm inheriting an 0-16, I have to feel like I have a pretty long leash from ownership, from the Haslams, to do what I need to do over a span of several years. And like I said, if I'm a GM, my philosophy is you build and win along the lines, and I'm not going to get a quarterback with big question marks when I have these potential generational talents in the lines on the board, you know, when I could have them. So
all makes sense to me. All makes sense to me. 1-15 here.
That's right. Yeah, one win coming up.
but hey, it's an improvement.
No, but I'm just imagining.
I think the Browns will be significantly improved.
I think so. I'm just imagining Myles Garrett and Bradley Chubb, you know, rushing from each end. And that's going to be scary for any opposing quarterback. I don't care who you have on your offensive line.
Yeah. And all the tools they brought in outside the lines at wide receiver.
Yeah. Carlos and Hyde. They're
beefing
and
up the running
Landry.
Game. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. They've done a lot. So, no, I mean, granted, I'm not a huge Cleveland fan, but to me that checks. So
it's unconventional, and like I said, it's not going to happen. But I think that's what should happen. So all right, so you're Dave Gettleman. Put on the New York Giants hat.
Yep.
What are you doing?
Yeah. So I'm piloting a team who had significant drama last year with the whole benching of Eli Manning, and I think every blog site you view is kind of viewing Saquon Barkley out of Penn State as probably the safest pick on the draft board this year, I would argue, in that you know that he is going to be a playmaker. I mean, you watch that game Penn State last year on Saturday night where he single-handedly beat that team. I think a lot of people are expecting Barkley to go to the New York Giants, but maybe like you, I'm looking a little more unconventional. And if I'm the New York Giants, after the debacle with Eli Manning getting benched, breaking the streak, Eli Manning is clearly down, and that's fine. I think I need to draft the quarterback of the future. I really do. I think where the Giants are lacking is the on-field general that they need. Eli is fading so quickly, regardless of his experience, regardless of his understanding of the game. It is time to start moving on, and it's going to be rough in the Meadowlands. It's not going to be as ugly as Favre Rodgers was in Green Bay, but at this point, if Eli is really the team player that everyone says he is, honestly, minus that whole he got drafted by San Diego and refused to play for them.
Right.
I need to draft a quarterback who Eli can teach you over the next 2 to 3 years, because there's no way Eli Manning is my starting quarterback in 3 years.
Yeah, totally agreed.
So even though Barkley had that amazing 440, 40-yard dash, he runs downhill, he can catch, especially since you dropped the bomb on me of taking Bradley Chubb with with your number one pick, I'm going to now move up and take Sam Darnold as my number two pick, and I'm going to make him my franchise quarterback of the future. He's the most NFL ready, in my opinion, of any quarterback on this list this year. I'm going to draft him with the full intention of Eli gets a year, maybe two, if this year goes well, and in 3 years, you're going to see Sam Darnold as the hero in New York.
So talk to me about why you see Darnold as a better fit than Rosen in New York.
So you know that I was pretty down on Rosen
yeah.
This past college football season overall. I didn't like his body language on the field. I thought the turnovers were a little high. And even though Sam Darnold demonstrated a little immaturity, at the same time, I still thought that his ability to throw downfield, throw into coverage, and throw accurately is really what kind of set him apart. I mean, maybe we're splitting hairs at this point as we're talking about these guys. He's 20 years old. He took that Trojan team to, I think it was 21 wins over the last 2 years, so that's pretty impressive in college football. His arm is not the best. I think Josh Allen still has the best arm. But I think he still has a lot of ways that he is going to grow. And I think I'm not looking for a guy who's 100% NFL ready right now. If I'm in New York, I'm looking for a guy who's going to grow under a veteran quarterback who can teach him and kind of step into the role. And I see Sam Darnold as having the best ability to step into a role in 2 to 3 years. Yeah. As any cornerback in the field right now.
You know, I think there might be something to that because you know that I watch a lot of NFC East and you do as well as a Washington fan. But,
yeah.
You know, every time I watched the Eagles play the Giants this year, I was struck at how the Eagles would attack the superior defensive line that how the Giants would attack the superior defensive line that the Eagles were bringing. And basically, they would run slants across the field and Eli would do these quick short passes, you know, 10 yards or less. To his slot receivers and tight ends. And they would tear up the Eagles secondary and the linebacker core doing that.
Yeah.
And when you watch Darnold's tape, that's what he does very, very well. He's like you said, a little bit of a weaker arm. So he does not have the long range accuracy that Rosen might have a little bit more of. But what Darnold does have is laser pinpoint accuracy in the short to intermediate range. And so I think he could step into the Manning system in New York and make an almost seamless transition, and maybe honestly even play better than Eli, because I agree with you, he is definitely on the decline. It was pretty ugly watching Eli in New York last year,
and just disappointing for.
Yeah.
I mean, there will always be the comparisons between Eli and Peyton, and Eli and Brady, and all these things, but New York is not doing him any favors at this point. Like, let's start setting up a graceful exit, like Denver attempted to set up, didn't go well with Peyton. I mean, why not start? Let him be a mentor and be that guy who goes out in a blaze of glory, mm-hmm. handing the reins off to his beloved franchise, to the next heir apparent.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so since I'm the Cleveland guy, I'll keep my pick for four. So how about you just draft two in a row here, and you put on your Jets hat now and make your third pick?
Yeah, so this pick is a struggle for me because the Jets obviously need a quarterback. I would argue more than either the number one or the number two teams in the Browns and the Giants do this year. I think the Jets need an identity probably more than any other team in the NFL right now. And I think the way you do that is to draft another quarterback. So if I'm the Jets right now, I'm looking at not only who has my my accuracy, my ability to play in the NFL, but I'm also looking for the guy, not necessarily the Joe Namath of the world, but I'm looking for a guy who has that it factor. And I can't even describe it, mainly because I'm a 30-year-old male who would die on a football field. And I'm not a guy who's played a lot of on-field generalship, but I'm looking at Baker Mayfield. I really
am. Oh, wow.
From the
dark
Jets.
Horse. Okay. So I thought you were going to go Rosen here, but
I'm jumping up.
Yeah. Okay. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. You didn't see, you like how I did that right there.
Yeah.
That was, yeah, I'm a pretty tricky GM like that, and I've been baiting away all of the Cleveland general managers here.
I like it.
I'm taking Baker Mayfield. I think his impact to a team could really have the highest ceiling or the lowest floor. And I know that that is a huge cop out answer, but the way Baker Mayfield played in the college football playoff, the way he played in the championships down the streak, I know he had the behavior issues, but honestly, as an NFL GM with my quarterback, I'm not worried about my behavior issues, because if the team loves him, they're going to take care of him, and you're going to see the offensive linemen protect him. And maybe you got to worry a little bit about the off the field shenanigans that Baker Mayfield had. But overall, I think he has matured to the point that I am willing to invest in him, and I'm getting a flashy personality, a great athlete, and a guy who I can try to build an identity for my team around. So I'm taking Baker Mayfield number three. I'm pretty sure that got a few groans out there in podcast land with everyone listening, but I'm taking Baker with my surprise pick.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Let me throw a few names at you here.
Okay.
Matt Leiner. Troy Smith.
Yep.
Tim Tebow. Sam Bradford. RG3. Johnny Manziel. Jameis Winston. Marcus Mariota. You see where I'm going here. There's not a great track record of Heisman Trophy winners doing well in the NFL. And I get the argument. Baker Mayfield's stats are pretty ridiculous. You can compare his stats to literally any great college quarterback, and he'd be right up there with any of them. But he plays in the Big 12, which we know is a very quarterback-friendly league. So his stats are inflated just for that reason alone. It's kind of like playing in the Mountain West. What do you see in Mayfield? I guess to distill my question, make it simple. Why is Baker Mayfield not Geno Smith in New York?
So honestly, it's the same reason why I also looked at Lamar Jackson with this pick, who I still don't believe is a top five pick. I think it is the explosive nature of both of these quarterbacks.
Another Heisman winner, makes by them the way, something so that, that's a good comp.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So something that I don't think NFL teams in this day and age, in the quarterback, I don't even want to say friendly league, but the quarterback dominated and ruled over league, you need that explosive playmaker on the field. And let's be honest, the Peyton Mannings, the Tom Brady's, even the Aaron Rodgers of the world are just not available in this draft in terms of the dynamic playmaking ability. And I know I compared three very, very different quarterbacks right there, but they all had that one factor, whether it was Peyton being able to change the plays at the line and diagnose a defense, Tom Brady being able to do whatever it is he does in terms of selling his soul, or Aaron Rodgers running around behind the line. You need that explosive playmaker in some way. And that's what I think both Baker and Lamar give you. And it is not a fit for, I would argue, 27 of the 32 teams I'm looking at right now with draft picks. But there's a couple teams where I think that explosive playmaker, for the same reason I think Cleveland, honestly, is looking at Baker Mayfield. I don't think they're going to pick him, but the same reason they're looking at him is that explosive playmaking ability that can change the game on a dime when you don't have the other pieces around him to necessarily get it done. Maybe he can do something by himself to lift the team up.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. I'm really intrigued to see what Baker Mayfield can do at the next level. I'm not a Baker Mayfield believer, same. But, you know, like you said, we've been wrong before on these things. I'm much more of a Lamar Jackson fan.
We're not keeping track of how many times we're wrong.
No, we'd be in trouble if we were. I'm much more of a Lamar Jackson fan than I am a Baker Mayfield fan. And I have more thoughts on Lamar Jackson probably for later in this conversation, but we should probably move this along because we're already getting a little bit long here. So number four pick, I'll be quick. I'm John Dorsey again, putting on my Cleveland Browns hat. I mentioned I'm building along the lines. I think perhaps the best overall prospect in this draft after Saquon Barkley is Quentin Nelson, a guard from Notre Dame. When you watch the tape on this guy, I mean, it's unreal. He's literally body slamming 275-pound defensive lineman to the ground. He's pulling, you know, it's kind of like that scene in Blindside where Michael Orr, and when he's in high school, drives the defensive lineman all the way across the field and over the fence. Like that's the kind of tape that Quentin Nelson's generating. Super quick, super strong, just an incredible phenom to watch. And I think if you're looking to build along the lines and you're trying to lay a foundation to protect your quarterback that you'll eventually get in the next year or two, Quentin Nelson is your guy. So I'm taking Quentin Nelson at number four.
Fair. So that actually makes my pick as John Elway, which a little bit of a promotion for me to be on John Elway's level at this point. But I'm absolutely taking Saquon Barkley if I'm John Elway at this point. If he has fallen to number five in the draft, I'm going to be really, really surprised if he falls to number five tomorrow night. I think he's a perfect fit in Denver, if I'm being totally honest, especially with Denver unloading their running backs earlier this week. I think that he fits that system. I don't think there's any way that Saquon Barkley is not a playmaker from day one, whatever team he ends up on. Again, like I said earlier, I think he's the best prospect right now on the board. I just don't think he's a great fit for any of the top four teams. But I also wouldn't be surprised if Cleveland takes him at number four if he ends up falling for some reason tomorrow night from the Giants. I still wouldn't be surprised if they target him.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think if like in terms of what will actually happen tomorrow, not if I am John Dorsey. If Barkley's available for the Browns, absolutely take him. The only other scenario where I can see the Browns not taking him is, and I was going to run this by you as well, because this could apply to Denver. So let's say I'm Bill Belichick and you are John Elway. If the Broncos are there at the fifth spot, I'm looking at the draft pick value chart, the Jimmy Johnson chart that basically assigns numerical values to each draft position. So the fifth pick, first round, what the Broncos currently have now, is worth 1,700 points in this in draft pick value. The Patriots currently own the 31st pick, which is worth 600, and the 23rd pick, which is worth 760. So that's 1,360, right? The Patriots also own the 43rd overall pick, which is 470. So when you add those together, that is public math here. What did I say, 1,360? So that's going to be 1,850, right?
Yep.
So that is, according to the Jimmy Johnson chart, that's more draft value than the Broncos pick at five. So if you're John Elway, do you make that trade? If the Patriots are saying we're going to try to trade up because they're going to go get Lamar Jackson, which is something I do think could happen, are you going to take that trade? Yeah. Trade down in the first, get two picks in the first, get an additional pick in the second, but lose out on your Saquon Barkley?
I think trading down at this point for Denver is a great solution, mainly because outside of Saquon Barkley, what other running back is a first rounder here? And I think running back is one of the big holes for Denver right now, aside from some defensive backs with what's happened to that team over the last year or two. I think trading down here is a great idea. I mean, if you trade down, they're projecting guys like Nick Chubb coming out of Georgia, who had a great career at Georgia, fall into the second round. So they're going to be later on. I think there are a lot of teams who are still trying to get into the top 10, even 24 hours out like we are right now. If I'm John Elway, I am absolutely trying to farm this pick around and try to create a little more for myself, because I don't need necessarily my franchise quarterback right now, and I don't need a franchise running back right now. I need to build around mainly, I would argue, my defense, offensive line, if I'm in
I think that if Chubb is on the board, because the Browns are not going to get Chubb at number one, like I pick. So if Chubb's on the board with Denver, I think that is the jackpot for Denver. And you put Chubb on one side and Von Miller on the other, and you're going to be fierce. So I think in that case, Elway does not trade down. I don't think it'd be worth it. I think you want to grab Chubb if he's there. But basically, if Chubb's not there, if I'm Elway, I'm taking that trade and trading down.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, so fair. I'm going to move on to number six here. So the Colts. You know, this one's tough. The Colts have so many holes on their roster. I don't really know where to go with this. You might like where I'm leaning on this. I'm leaning towards linebacker, and there are two names that jump out at me. And for your sake, because Virginia Tech linebacker Tremaine Edmonds. This guy's huge. I mean, 253-pound linebacker. He's fast, around a 4.54 40 at the combine. He's super young. He's 19. And so he's got a lot of upside for many years to come. Good leadership, could captain the defense, coming right in. I think could cover in space, could rush the passer. I mean, really, I think a versatile guy, could be all over the field and could change the face of the defense, or at least be the start of a big change for the Colts there. So I think I would take Tremaine Edmonds.
Nice. Based on, you know, I watch a lot of Colts games with my wife being from Indianapolis. I think if you are the Colts right now, I like your pickup on defense, but I actually think that you got to go with the offensive line one more time. I think that offensive line is single-handedly the reason why the Colts have failed to have a productive season in 3 years, that they've allowed Andrew Luck to get sacked so much. You know, I love talking about how much Andrew Luck has regressed. I think that the root cause of all these regressions is the fact that he never has any time. So I would disagree with you a little and look at offensive line. There's a couple names I'm eyeing, but I'll keep them for later picks. But you know how much I love Tremaine Edmonds, that I think that is a phenomenal pick, no matter what team he goes to right now.
And, you know, if I hadn't taken, as John Dorsey, if I hadn't taken Quentin Nelson off the board, I think that's a no-brainer, because, like I said, he's a generational offensive line talent. So the Colts have to nab him if he's there. But if he's not there, then I think it's kind of a big step down to go with Mike McGlinchey, who's Nelson's teammate at Notre Dame. So that'd be kind of maybe a waste of really high draft picks. So if that's the case, maybe the Colts trade down, you know, get some more draft capital to do that.
And And I think that is the best thing the Colts can do, because actually, as I was looking at Mike McGlinchey's stats, he's actually the guy I've penciled in as a great fit for the Colts, not only because of the type of player he is and how versatile he is, that he can play on the left or the right side of the line. He's Matt Ryan's cousin, and he's coming out of Notre Dame. And obviously, NFL teams do not care as much about what college you played for. But at the same time, if that fan base is already there in Indiana, and Notre Dame is known for having phenomenal line coaches, that seems like a great fit, that I'm going to bring a good fan base. I'm going to bring a solid coaching experience with this guy. For the same reason, I think Tremaine Edmonds is a great pick anywhere. You know, he's coming from a Bud Foster defense. I like Mike McGlinchey a little more, but Matt Ryan's cousin. This dude knows
for sure. All right, so you're now the Tampa Bay Bucks GM. I'm curious if you have the same pick here that I do. Who would you pick?
I bet I don't, because this one's a little out of the box. I'm actually taking.
That's exactly
James,
who I had.
Out of Florida. Is it? Okay. I think watching that Tampa Bay team, I think the potential is growing. I don't think they're anywhere near where they need to be in order to truly compete. But I think at this point, you got to get they need a secondary. And I think Derwin James, as a strong safety, really two-dimensional. He can obviously help you downfield. I think he can come up and help in the run. I think he's a good pickup for a team who is still 2 to 3 years away from competing at least.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you keep him in Florida, right? Florida State guy. So I think there's a lot of upside there are a lot of reasons for the Bucks to do that. And, you know, if you're rebuilding your secondary like the Bucks need to, it's always best, I think, to start with a strong safety. So, all right. So the Bears here, you know, I think the Bears, a lot of their draft approach, I think, needs to be all about Mitchell Trubisky and giving him the tools that he needs to succeed. I think offensive skill position players below Saquon Barkley, not super rich in the first round. So I think I'd probably be looking to build along the lines. So I'd take someone who went to school not too far from Chicago. And we already talked about him, but Mike McGlinchey, Notre Dame. So just boost the offensive line there. It's a little bit high to take McGlinchey. So again, maybe, you know, look to trade down to the Bills, for example, who might want to trade up to get a quarterback. That could be an option. But I think if I'm the GM, I'm looking to build the offensive line to protect Trubisky.
So what do you think if you're trying to build an offense? I like your call building an offensive line. That's exactly where I was thinking. But I was also looking at Calvin Ridley, as who I think is the best wide receiver in the draft this year. If I'm trying to give Mitch Trubisky something that he can actually work with, I'd be tempted to look at Calvin Ridley. I mean, he's a dynamic, he's an exciting player coming out of Alabama, who's not always known for their wide receivers, but they've done okay in the NFL. With the couple I'm thinking of.
Yeah, so, you know, I think Ridley is a better.
You've got the best.
Yeah, I think Ridley is a better target for like the late teens, early 20s picks. And so, you know, if you're Chicago and the Bills want to trade up from their 22 spot, that could be a great spot to trade down to and still be able to get Ridley. And if you can do that, I mean, that's a huge win, I think, because Ridley at 22 is a great deal.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think getting Ridley that late in the first round would be epic. Yeah.
All right, so you're John Lynch now.
So 49ers. That makes me San Francisco. Yeah. John Lynch. So
there's
John
a pick
Lynch,
here that I think, given recent events, I think this makes the pick for the Niners a little bit easier here. I'm curious to see what your pick is.
I'm actually going with Roquan Smith.
That's it. Yeah, I was thinking about
Georgia here. Is that what you're
exactly,
thinking?
Because Reuben Foster is probably going to get released here, given his domestic violence charges. So
exactly. Exactly. And look at the things San Francisco's done in this offseason. Obviously, Richard Sherman is the biggest acquisition that they've had so far. But I like the focus that San Francisco is putting on the defense, where it looked like after they went after Jimmy Garoppolo that they were going to be all in on the offense and they were going to spend all this money. But they demonstrated to me that they're willing to spend the money to start building up that defense, which I think is going to make the Bay Area pretty exciting coming up here, specifically with these 9 and 10 picks between San Francisco and Oakland.
Yeah, totally agree. I think it's a great pick. I think it'd be a huge pickup.
So you're a...
Sorry, go ahead. What?
So you're John Gruden. What are you thinking if you're John Gruden in Oakland right now? Obviously, you've evaluated all these guys on Monday Night Football.
Right.
For years and years, you've talked a little smack about pretty much all of them. A couple of them have been Gruden grinders during bowl season. But what are you looking for if you've been watching Monday Night Football, so obviously evaluating NFL talent? What are you looking for in a college athlete coming towards your new program?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think on this one, I'm leaning towards Minkah Fitzpatrick. Someone to provide a huge boost to secondary. You know, you've already got Khalil Mack, a huge defensive playmaker on Oakland, and adding a really dynamic guy like Fitzpatrick in the secondary, I think just provides a really good boost to a defense that was not great last year. So, you know, he's pretty prototypical for a defensive back, and he has all the right things, has all the good combine measurables. There are really no red flags, I think, in Fitzpatrick, so I think he's a pretty safe pick at number 10 there. Another one on my radar, Vita Vea from Washington.
Yeah, that's who.
Yeah,
I was looking
so at I think well. I think he'd be a really good pick as well. But I'd say either Fitzpatrick or Vea. I guess, you know, but since I have to choose, I'll go Fitzpatrick.
Man, but if you're John Gruden, how much do you love defensive tackles and defensive ends? Like, think of the Warren Sapps of the world.
Yeah, totally.
I think no matter what, he's picking a defender here. And now that I said that, he's going to pick an offensive guy.
Probably.
But I, man, you look at John Gruden's style and the grinder mentality. I think he's absolutely going defense, and he's going with a guy who he thinks is going to be in the trenches doing.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. So that's all 10. We should probably wrap it up here anyway. Do you have any general thoughts on the draft? I have one at least, which is that we did not draft Josh Allen in the top 10. Do you think he's going to drop out of the top 10 tomorrow?
I do. I think he's got the downfield arm that NFL teams are kind of looking for, but he's pretty unproven and untested. I know he had a good combine that kind of jumped him up, but we haven't seen a lot of this talk out of necessarily scouts and pro GMs. We're seeing this out of a lot of guys who are watching the combine on NFL Network and all these places who obviously know talent. But I think Josh Allen is kind of the flashy pick right now and not necessarily the trustworthy pick. And at this point, you got a lot of teams who are trying to build a franchise. And I don't think Josh Allen is who you're building a franchise around. Right
now. I agree with you. I think that I really don't understand the hype around him. I think him as a number one pick is just absurd. I was looking at their stats, his stats yesterday, and comparing him to Christian Hackenberg. They're the same player. And, you know, let the Christian Hackenberg signing and short-lived NFL career be a warning sign that people who are interested in Josh Allen, because all the prototypical signs that scouts talk about are there, right? The big hands, the tall frame, the toughness, the durability, the intelligence. But when you look at what they can do, they can't complete passes at the end of the day. They can't complete passes, and they throw interceptions. And it turns out, to be a quarterback, you need to be able to throw good passes.
Can you remember a draft where we talk about so many teams who are going to be looking to trade down? So as I'm looking at all these teams, I think the only two teams I could think of possibly trading up right now are Buffalo to try to find their franchise quarterback, because I don't think they're there yet. I could also see the Patriots, since they have two first-round picks, trying to do something to get a little higher up. But other than those two teams, everyone is looking to trade down. I think the Eagles are going to try to get out of the first round.
I think so, too.
I think Denver's going to trade down. I think Indianapolis is going to trade down. I mean, it's a weird year where we've got, I would argue, five potential first-round quarterbacks, and that's not even including Mason Rudolph, who did phenomenal things at
in the Big 12, though.
valid, but the dude can sling it. It's a quarterback-friendly league. But it's interesting that we have so many quarterbacks this year, so few running backs, that for a lot of guys, it's about building the tools around these franchise players instead of trying to find the franchise players this year. I found that very, very interesting as I was looking at these names this year.
No, I mean, I think you're right. And when you look at the draft board, what it basically boils down to, it falls fairly neatly along these lines in terms of the folks who need to trade up and those who need to trade down, is you either have your quarterback or you don't. And that speaks to the value of the quarterback position in today's NFL and how important it is to have a competent signal caller under center. And if you don't have that, you know, you're not going to go anywhere with your franchise. So, well,
it's going to be fun.
Are you watching the draft, or are you watching NBA or NHL playoffs instead?
I'm gonna have to multitask. Yeah. So game one of the Caps Penguins series. You know, the Caps have lost 9 out of 10 playoff series against the Penguins in their last 10 appearances. So this could be rough, or this could be the most epic hockey playoffs I've ever watched. So I'll probably have that on the big screen and then have the draft on the iPad so I could be watching that.
I love it.
You know the draft. They like to
Oh, they drag it out so much. Yeah, honestly, normally what I do is just follow along on Twitter so I can, you know, watch other sports games while the draft's going on because it just takes so long.
Yeah.
But it'll be exciting. So one final question, though. So we just did this NFL draft pretending we're the GMs and we talked through draft strategy and what we would do in those positions, but we weren't really making predictions. So in terms of predictions, who do you think is the first overall pick tomorrow?
Seattle.
Yeah, I agree. And who do you think is number two? Giants.
Saquon Barkley.
Okay.
And honestly, I don't think Saquon Barkley is a bad decision. I just think the Giants need to find their way forward. But I truly think he's the best prospect in the draft and the most NFL ready of any player we're looking at in terms of the skilled positions. I'm not as good at analyzing the other ones, but I don't think you can go wrong with either of those picks. If I'm being
okay,
honest.
Fair enough. And then number three?
Josh Rosen, okay. Probably.
Yeah, I am two-thirds in agreement. I'm going to say Darnold, Chubb, Rosen for the same front seven reason I talked about. Okay. So we'll see. We'll see who owes who a beer tomorrow.
Yeah, fair enough. Normally, I don't so I probably shouldn't have committed to that already.
All right. Anything else, Pete, before we sign off?
No. What a fun week. Thanks for jumping on for a little emergency.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks to all our listeners for listening. If you agree or disagree, feel free to send us a message. If you're listening to this on the Anchor app, just go ahead and click that message button. We'd love to hear from you. We can play your comment on our next podcast, or we can just message you back. We'd love to talk about football. Also, a lot of stuff going on, hockey, basketball, baseball. If you have any thoughts on that, feel free to send us a note. We'll talk about it on the podcast next week. If you want to shoot us an email, you can reach me, Zach, Z-A-C, at vernacularpodcast.com. Pete can be reached at pete@vernacularpodcast.com. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, @ThirdStringPod, or my account is @ZachCrippen, and Pete is @Pete_Laclede. And until next time, thanks for listening to Third String Podcast. I'll tell you no matter.